Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Peter Koronius.
I ended up in the leadership role within the internet in Australia in the early days of the internet here. And we had identified cybersecurity as one of the very early potential impediments of trust and uptake of the internet by users.
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to the conference room. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Peter Koronius. Peter is an internationally recognized authority on cyber policy, an internet industry leader. He's an author, activist, and policy innovator. He's a former head of Australia's Internet Industry Association, where he led the development of iCode, an industry-wide botnet mitigation program that within 4 months reached 92% of the Australian population and was later adapted by the US telecoms industry for the benefit of an estimated 276 million users. As the head of IIA, he helped steer Australia's policies on copyright, privacy, child safety, critical infrastructure protection, cybercrime, and much more. And on two occasions, he was invited to the White House to brief the Obama administration's cybersecurity leadership. And in 2022, Peter founded cyberminds.org, a nonprofit dedicated to bringing scalable, evidence-based mental health support to embattled cyber teams. And I'm delighted to say that Peter is joining us here in the conference room. Peter, good afternoon or good morning in Australia, and welcome to the conference room.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for having me.
It's a genuine pleasure. So every hero has an origin story, and you're the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from being the head of the IIA in Australia to founding CyberMinds?
Well, short story is, I've had a long interest in neuroscience since I was a child, actually. My uncle was a professor of neuroscience, of neuropathology, actually. And when I was 10 years old, I remember him taking me into his laboratory and he was showing me human brains in buckets. It impressed me just how this 1.5 kilogram structure of gray mass could be the repository of our entire human experience. So I've always had a fascination with the brain. I went on to study some neuroscience at uni and I taught as well in that area. After several career changes, I ended up in the leadership role within the internet in Australia in the early days of the internet here. And we had identified cybersecurity as one of the very early potential impediments of trust and uptake of the internet by users. So I've sort of had this parallel interest of cybersecurity, but also in the background, this greater sense of commitment to the humans that are behind the internet revolution. And now these days, the humans who are defending us against cyber attack. Increasingly, I was starting to see signs of burnout occurring within my professional peers within cybersecurity. So finally, actually during COVID, the penny dropped that maybe there was a time and an opportunity now to merge my two passions of the neuroscience and personal development and human resilience techniques that I'd used in my own professional career and bringing them back into cybersecurity in the form of a dedicated initiative using the IREST, or the Integrative Restoration Protocol, which is now the central part of our delivery as we bring direct on-the-ground support to embattled cyber teams.
Tell me about the actual problem that CyberMinds was created to address.
In a nutshell, the issue we see within cyber, which many of your listeners would be familiar with, is the ongoing skills deficit, that we just don't have the number of people working in cybersecurity that we need for the current threats that we're facing. And also, importantly, we're seeing people leaving the sector due to burnout. So the combined effect of the high stress environment in which they're operating and the fact that this is really not something that our human brains have been optimized for, this 24/7 attack cycle was never part of our evolutionary development when we were developing mechanisms by which in the physical world we could recognize and respond to threats. As a result of that, really our neurology is being overwhelmed by the constancy of the cyber threat landscape. And the result is that people are leaving, or if they're not leaving, they're suffering, they're burning out, their relationships are being affected, their performance is being affected. And as a result, arguably beyond the individual suffering, which is, by the way, a large part of what drives our mission, is the alleviation of suffering in our peers. But beyond that, you could understand it will have impacts on both organizational security and ultimately on national security. So there's a big sort of problem here to be addressed, and it all comes down to the people.
Right. Okay. So a very short answer to a very short question, which I'm sure is a very long answer. How is CyberMinds tackling this problem?
Well, as I mentioned, we are using this protocol. It's known as IREST, or Integrative Restoration. It was developed by Dr. Richard Miller in California back in the 70s, and he's applied it in many domains. But in 2004, he brought it into the US military to tackle PTSD in returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. So over the course of what is nearly 15 years, the protocol has now found its way into around about 75 or 80 veterans facilities for people returning, and also active service military, supported by about 35 scientific studies that show how effective it is in helping people recover from trauma, but also to manage depression, anxiety, insomnia, pain, many of the psychological issues that we see afflicting cyber teams these days. So in short, we know it works. It's got a massive sort of providence within the military field. And so for me, it was a really obvious sort of segue to bring what is arguably a parallel field, and that is cyber defense. And that's what we're doing. So the protocol is a 10-step process of deep relaxation combined with the capacity to work directly with emotions and beliefs and memories and traumas that maybe have encountered in the past, have been stored in our subconscious, and are actually driving a lot of our behavior and our response to stress situations. And because they're coming at us from our subconscious mind, we don't really have direct access to them. We can't basically talk ourselves out of this. But the IRIS protocol is a very sort of trauma aware and a safe way to go back in and take a look around at what's driving our behaviors and what's driving our inability to switch off and what's driving this overwhelming sense of just loss of control or inability to support the team or fear of letting the team down, or many of these drivers that we've identified that are actually plaguing cyber teams. And here we have a tool where you can go in, work with those things and basically get resolution so that you can establish a new default where you're able to work in a high stress, maybe an incident response situation or in a SOC team situation, and you can remain calm, centered, happy, in control and performing optimally. And that's really what the protocol delivers.
So how does CyberMinds deliver that? What's the vehicle by which the users or the clients can benefit from the offering?
Yeah, it's a guided process. So you'll have a facilitator or a mentor that will work with individuals, or more generally, we work with teams and we bring them in. Usually we do it lying down because then it gives you the ability to relax completely without concerned that you might fall out of your chair. You can do it in a seated position. We've trained and done pilot programs.
You don't recommend people doing this while they're driving?
Actually, someone did try it walking around, and you can do it, but she said, I had to remember to keep watching out for cars. Because you do get extremely relaxed. It's really a state of hyper relaxation. So you're going into deep states of relaxation, akin to the kind of depth of relaxation that you would have in deep sleep, but with difference that you're actually fully conscious and aware. So it's it's a very strange state. It feels sometimes people snore and yet they're aware that they're snoring. So they're almost watching themselves sleeping. That's how deep you go. You go into the state of delta brainwave activity, which is the slowest brainwave activity. But because you're conscious and aware, you start to get access to these sort of subconscious drivers we talk about that are normally only coming out at us during our dream states. When you have dreams, the brain is actually processing a lot of the unconscious impressions that have come at you during the day or earlier in your life. And so there's all this processing going on. But one of the things we're finding with cybersecurity, if you're not sleeping well, then you're not really going through the normal process of resolution of a lot of these emotional drivers. So they remain unresolved and sitting beneath the surface. That's really what's getting triggered when people start to feel irritable or very active, this sense of hypervigilance that they report where they're unable to switch off. It's all being driven by these overriding sense of pressure on them that they're carrying not only into their home lives, but also into their sleep. That's sort of the level at which we're working. The good news is that we can get pretty quick results. We're doing a small pilot with Defence here in Australia at the moment. And we found even after the second session, they're reporting that they're sleeping better. People are saying that they're making better decisions. They're just feeling calmer overall. It's actually pretty amazing how quickly we can start to bring restoration as we integrate in the individuals all these different aspects of their being, and we bring them into one point of feeling more comfortable about even factors that they can't control. And that's a big part of the narrative. The fact is that we cannot control our external environment. In cybersecurity, no more acutely felt that this sense that the attack environment is not widely appreciated by people outside of cyber. There's not a lot of recognition given to success when it occurs because largely it's invisible. So we're teaching teams and individuals in teams how to operate in these constant sort of relentless environments while still building within them and maintaining a sense of morale, high morale, and also at a personal level, a sense of calm and equanimity and just reconnecting them with their sense of mission and purpose and why they came into cybersecurity in the first place.
So do you find that a lot of the people that are coming through are people who you want to help or are more appropriate clients, shall we say, people who have had trauma in their lives and are finding that that's the foundation, sort of soft foundation upon which they have built their psyche, so to speak, are now struggling in a cybersecurity role because it is a relatively high stakes, relatively high pressure environment, as opposed to people who had a pretty stable upbringing, no particular trauma, and are coming into cyber? Or are you finding that because they're in cyber, it doesn't, irrespective of their background, they may still, because of this relentless 24/7 attack landscape, that irrespective of their background, they could still find themselves having mental health challenges that cyber minds can help them with?
I think it's both. I mean, obviously, if they're coming in with trauma, then working in cyber is not really going to help them that much. It will trigger overreactions or hypervigilance more easily. But even if they haven't, then the nature of the work itself can create within them this inability to switch off because they're passionate about their work. And everyone in cyber that I know is here to make a difference. And so they're very committed. Often they don't have the resources, as I mentioned, the recognition, but still they're doing their best. And yet because of the nature of the neurology was designed using cues from the environment to switch on if there was danger. And we call that part of the brain the limbic system. So it governs the flight or fight response, which everyone's heard about. Now, in ancient times, when the threats were physical, or certainly pre-internet times, the limbic system was designed to switch on, deal with the threat, you either escape or fight, survive, and then it was designed to deactivate or to de-escalate using this parasympathetic nervous system comes in and starts to slow the heart rate, bring the blood pressure down, and return you to a state of rest. Now, that's how it's meant to work. The problem is that when you're dealing with what is effectively a psychological threat environment, where the threats are virtual threats and are unrelenting, there is no capacity for the limbic system to deactivate because the threat is always there. The fear of a call in the middle of the night. We know cyber team participants that sleep with their phones under their pillows. So that's the degree to which people are operating these days in some cases. So it's this subconscious thing. If you did something like that, you're almost setting yourself up for remaining in that state of vigilance because you're half expecting the phone to go off every time you go to sleep, whether or not it's under your pillow, you know, it could be next to you or wherever. The thing is, it's this expectation of something that might happen. You don't know when, you don't know to what degree, but you do know that the consequences could be severe, catastrophic, existential even, depending on what role you're working in and who and what you're protecting. That's a very heavy responsibility to be carrying. As I say, that we're not optimized for this. There is no part of our evolutionary defense, threat detection, and response structure that could ever have arisen in contemplation of the kind of threat environment that we're doing. It just didn't happen that way. Maybe in 200 million years from now, when we've evolved further and we're sort of used to working in virtual environments with virtual threats, maybe we'll develop more appropriate response, but we don't have that. We don't even have 200 days. In many cases, we're measuring burnout now in cyber teams that's exceeding that of frontline healthcare workers.
Wow.
That's even taking COVID into account.
So how widespread is the problem? To what degree are you seeing this, and what research or studies have you seen that indicate that this is a potentially widespread problem?
Well, on all the metrics, and I've got the very great benefit of having a leading cyber behavioral expert on our board, Dr. Andrew Reeve. So we're measuring as we go. And part of the CyberMind's offering, if you like, is beyond the delivery of the protocol, we can actually measure the progress and the change in the improvement in mental health in team members. And we can report to the individuals and in an anonymized way to the organization where the teams sit in relation to where they began prior to the program, also where they sit in relation to their industry peers, and where they sit in relation to the general population. And when we looked at the population norm data around the three core metrics of burnout being emotional depletion, just that feeling of having nothing left to give emotionally, personalization or cynicism, which is speaking to this question of almost quiet quitting or the feeling of feeling more disengaged. And on the third metric, professional efficacy, or how well you think you're doing in your job. On all three metrics, cyber teams are performing worse than the standardized population norms for each place that we measure it. So,
and this data is local to Australia, or it's the US, or it's...
It is. At the moment, we've started in Australia, but we have the capacity. I mean, these are internationally standardized psychometric surveys that we can do. So part of our mission as we roll CyberMinds into the US is that we'll replicate the studies that we have done here. But I am under no illusions that we're going to find anything different. I think just anecdotally talking to CISOs in the US and elsewhere, they're all saying the same thing. This is mental health of their teams is top of mind. So even anecdotally, even without the research, they will tell you that they're worried about their teams. To be frank, I think they're concerned about their own mental health. Oftentimes a CISO will come to us and say, I want training for my team, but you know that they also want it for themselves.
Yeah, understandably. Okay, so clearly it's a very important work and a problem that really needs solving. Normally, at this part of the podcast, I would normally ask you what your top three tips for somebody to be successful in this field is. I'm guessing from what you were talking about, that deep state of mind and the kind of techniques, you don't really deal in tips.
Yeah, no, we don't do tips. I mean, the reason is not to be too frivolous here, but these drivers of burnout are very deep-seated in many people. They may not even know what you're carrying. That's why the protocol is so powerful, because it's like the tip of the iceberg, but now we're going into the bulk of the iceberg that's below the surface. And that's where the work is to be done and where the progress can be made. The tips are operating at the level of the tip of the iceberg, as it were, in the conscious mind. But going and taking a walk or getting exercise or any of those things, they're good. But if the underlying issues are not being addressed, if they're not being listened to, we talk about in IREST, even emotional states can be messengers for us. It's something to pay attention to that we haven't been acknowledging or listening to. So you've got to go in this very relaxed state, and that's where the work is happening. So a tip, really, there's no tip I could really give you other than pay attention to how you're feeling right now. And if you feel that there is value in investing in yourself or in your teams, then you might take a look at the kind of programs that we're offering. Come to our launch in at RSA in San Francisco in 3 weeks. So we're not at RSA, but we're nearby. RSA is very supportive of what we're doing, by the way. Shout out to them that they've helped put this issue on the agenda. But we're actually running a mental health in cybersecurity leadership summit on the 24th of April in San Francisco. We can provide a link below this podcast if people want to come. It's free of charge. We'll be interviewing a Ukrainian cyber defender. You'll be hearing from Dr. Richard Miller in person, the founder of the IRIS Institute and the developer of the protocol that we're using. And you'll even get a direct taste and experience of the protocol. So it'll be a fun session and really important. I think it's a big move for us to move into the US, but we're really confident. The IRIS Institute has trained 4,000 facilitators in the US. So we know hitting the ground there that we've already got a resource from which we can scale almost immediately. So we're pretty confident that we're going to be able to go in and make a difference. But to do that, we need the support and the recognition, the sharing of what we're doing, so that we can collectively and collaboratively address this challenge that we all face.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, if people wanted to reach out to you or find out more about CyberMinds, what's the best way for them to do that?
Website cyberminds with a Z dot org is the easiest way to get to us, and someone will respond. Very happy to have a conversation with anyone that needs help or wants to bring us into the team.
Fantastic. I'll make sure that links to CyberMinds and also a link to your launch close by to RSA on the 24th of April is posted below. Peter, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about CyberMinds. This is clearly a very important, a lot more widespread a challenge than I thought. And I'm really very, very happy to have heard about it, to spread the word. I wish you and CyberMinds all the very, very best for a successful launch and every success in the important work that you're doing. So Peter Corinius, thank you so much for coming into the conference room.
Thanks, Simon. Talk to you soon.
Coming up next week on the conference room, it's our 100th episode. And in celebration, I'll be interviewed by my good friend, Howard Reel. Co-founded Solisi in 2005. And Solisi is in a very lucky position of being pretty well known within cybersecurity. When there's any economic uncertainty, the first thing that stops and the last thing that's going to restart at the other end is hiring. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch,
Drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.